This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time for the Beauforting Sports Buzz of the Day, where we discuss today's most buzzworthy sports story. Brought to you by Milwaukee's most buzzed about beverage. 100% natural Beauforting beer. Go all natural and drink in the boff.
The sports buzz of the day is what happened in Cleveland last night, and it's the buzz across all national media markets. I mean, like, I've seen CNN talking about this, sure, of what we saw last night. It was absolutely crazy. It's something I've never seen
now
before.
I have a question for both of you. So this lawyer is saying, well, all options are on the table, right, for Mason Rudolph after Myles Garrett hits him with Mason Rudolph's own helmet. If Mason Rudolph and his attorney go after the press charges and then sue Myles Garrett, does he lose locker room cred?
Yes.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
That's not in his own locker room?
Yes.
No. Yeah. We took care of it.
Some guys will, but yeah. Not all.
Because I was thinking about that. I was like, if he actually does anything, I would assume everybody's stay away from
now,
him.
Now, here's the thing. Now, if that happens in the locker room, foul charges away.
Then it doesn't matter.
Right. So, like, if it was a player getting into a fight in the locker room.
On your own team. Yep.
Right. Or.
So, like, we've had
guys go from one locker room to another locker room and get into it.
Who was the dude that was trying to get into the Bucks locker room a few years ago?
Oh, I don't remember.
What? Did Chris Paul do that?
Chris Paul was trying to get into somebody's locker room.
So, I mean,
at some
that's
point.
Not unheard, but that we've had guys go from one locker room to another locker room. But to me, between the white line, listen, and I know I'm different time, different guy. And I think I've told you this guy before. One of my coaches said to me, you know, son, in the game of football, you can commit assault and battery between these two white lines.
Legally.
Let's get it done. You're taught now. I don't think they teach that like that anymore.
My high school coach said the same thing.
I don't think they do it anymore. But that's what we're. You can legally, you can commit assault and battery between these two white lines.
Never again in your life will you have the opportunity to commit assault on this field and not get charged for it.
Yes.
You take your helmet. Our coach used to always say this. You guys know Biff, crazy guy, right?
Well, don't call a coach's name.
Well, don't worry about it. It's a nickname. Okay. He's swinging the keys around, right? Swinging the keys around and goes up, Billy, take this helmet anywhere. You're off the team. You know why? Committing felony assault with that thing. He'd tell you just like it is. That thing is a weapon that you're committing assault with. Yeah. You can do it here, and it's okay because it's part of the game. Once you go down 116th with a helmet on, that's assault. In the field of play, though, to answer your question, Steve, I think it would be weak.
It would be. Now, the only thing that's, had he hit that joker in the crown of his head and blood splattered all over the place, yeah, you better go get your lawyer.
Yeah, then we'll have.
But the way it played out here, probably not so.
Do you think he should sue, Steve?
No. I agree with you. No, I don't. I think he's going to be ostracized from NFL locker rooms if he sues this dude.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going to happen.
Because Pouncey and them boys would say, we took care of it.
Yeah, it's done.
We took care of it.
Yeah.
Tell your agent and your lawyer to shut up and it's done. Let's move on.
Yeah.
He got suspended for the rest of the year. This is done. Let's go.
That's what your boys in. I mean, I don't know if you got the drop. Was that Cameron Jordan? Was it Cameron Jordan? Is that who I'm looking for? Who's it?
Cameron Jordan from the Saints?
No. Was it Hayward? Does Hayward play for them?
Casey Hayward. Or not Casey Hayward. Wow, I can't think of his name right now.
Who's he play for?
You're right, though.
He played for the Steelers.
Hayward
right?
does play for the Steelers. And former Ohio State football player.
I told him, guys, they better go take care of it right now because he didn't come on the field.
Cam Hayward.
Yeah, he couldn't run the field. So he's out there screaming, you better go take care of it. You better go do it. And he's barking out orders, but he can't run on the field. So I think they feel like that they got it taken care of that mm-hmm. way. I mean, we'll see. What I don't get, Billy, is that in baseball and in hockey, it's okay.
This is Cam Hayward after the game last night.
Touches fly high, but for it to get to a point where a guy to use a helmet as a weapon and hit a guy in the head, uncalled for, and I'm all about being competitive, but that'd be one of the stupidest things I ever saw.
Suspended for the
yes, team. Hands down. And I told those other players on the other side, y'all better handle that. I don't care who's out there. You know, we play this game, we all work for it. But for someone to use a helmet as a weapon is uncalled for.
It's just unheard of. It really is. You go handle that.
So what about, has anybody used a bat in one of those fracases in baseball?
I've seen that multiple different times.
Because that would be the equivalent to the helmet. But
well, no, you could take off the batting helmet and hit a pitcher with your batting helmet.
You can?
Well, just saying, can you? Yes. You have it on your head, so you go running out there, take it off, and run at him and smack him in the face with it or whatever you want to do with it.
Bryce Harper tried to a couple of years ago while he was
so
in the
why
fight.
Is that
I've seen guys throw their batting helmets at pitchers when they're charging.
So why is it accepted in baseball and not football? Why is it accepted in hockey? And not football.
Well, in hockey, I think it's
and then we had the huge fracas in was that the Malice and the Palace?
Yeah, the Malice and the Palace.
That's not comparable. I don't think. That's
I think
comparable.
That was different.
That's
because,
going up into the stands and being stupid.
Because it was part of the it was part of the.
But does
there.
The NBA get a black eye when they fight on the court? No.
Oh, they had a big tussle with it. The NBA
in the 90s.
Had a lot of people that were very, very against that.
In the 90s, when the Knicks and Heat were going at it, and Jeff Van Gundy is holding on to, who was it, Patrick Ewing's leg or whatever.
Yeah, I remember that.
I mean, so that type of stuff is stuff that they've gotten rid of in the NBA. In pretty much, you don't see the Charles Barkley fights anymore like you used to back in the day in the 80s. They've pretty much outlawed it. And Major League Baseball, after Bud Selig took over, pretty much did the exact same thing. If you go back and think about when the Brewers were in the American League and the brawls that would happen when Phil Garner was here with the Seattle Mariners, with the Chicago White Sox and Terry Bevington, they were fighting 2-3 games in a series. Every day they were bench-clearing brawls every game of both of those times. They would see both of those teams during the regular season. Consistently that was happening. Now you hardly ever see a bench-clearing brawl, and when you do, it's normally what? Just out there talking to one another. Right. Hey, man, where are you going after mm-hmm. the game tonight? Yeah, these two.
It calms down pretty quickly.
Yeah, these two idiots want to be mad at each other. Let them. But where are we going to go have a drink tonight? I mean, that's kind of what it is. So, do they get a free pass? Arian Foster, the former Texans running back, who the one that brought all this up on Twitter last night. But to a degree, I think they do. Because, again, you come out and you throw a punch and hit a pitcher in the face. Or you come out and the pitcher gets you in a headlock and starts punching on you like Nolan Ryan did to Robin Ventura. That type of stuff, that's assault to the same degree, is it not? Of course it is.
I would think that it is.
Now, again, you're not using a weapon per se other than your hands
in
that perspective. But they don't get the black eye on them when this type of stuff happens.
So is there a...
When Nolan Ryan had Robin Ventura in a headlock and was beating on him, everybody was laughing and having fun with it the next day that old Nolan Ryan was beating up Robin Ventura. Do you remember that?
I do remember
Or when
that.
Pedro Martinez flung old man Don Zimmer on the ground.
Yep.
In that brawl. I mean,
But there's also a different precedent for it because in hockey, it's part of the nature of the game. Like, there's some guys that are on teams because of their ability to protect other players,
but
right?
Even,
there's other guys that are there to protect the young dudes, the small dudes like a Mason Rudolph, which is get your ass out of the scrum, go over there, and the big boys will take care of this.
But that's even changed over the course of the years. You're 100%
it is. You don't have as many enforcers
as you used
to.
You don't see nearly as many fights. But in that situation, Gary, what happens? They drop their sticks, their gloves, the whole deal, and away we go.
5 minutes and we go.
Right. And now, again, it's very weird to me that we stand around and watch this like it's a professional boxing match. I've never understood that whole concept in hockey. But they're not using weapons on each other either. So, but again, same type of deal. It's, you know, fist versus fist and let them all fly for like 30 seconds.
We think that's okay. But if that were to happen, if
I don't think it's all right.
Well, I mean, but that's what they...
It's accepted in this culture, yes.
Yeah. I heard, and this was the way that it was phrased by Colin Cowherd earlier today. It would be like a pitcher beating a hitter and then running over, grabbing the bat, and hitting them over the head with the bat. I didn't see that.
That's crazy.
I saw the pitcher start the scrum, because if we all do remember, Mason Rudolph twists Miles Garrett's head on the bottom of the ground while the dude is holding on to you on the ground. I'm going to rip his face mask. Right. So then Miles Garrett said, hold on, if that's what we're going to play, I'll show you how to rip your helmet off, and right. I'll take yours right on off of your body. Mm-hmm. And there's too many opportunities in football, I feel like, where this goes to a different level. Like the Miles Jack situation where you throw a random punch, or Jalen Ramsey getting into it a couple of years ago with Michael Crabtree, and a punch is thrown, or A.J. Green and Jalen Ramsey a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, and that was, at that point, the biggest scrum that we
right,
saw,
right.
But it was between two dudes. It wasn't the full team. I think this is where we got the full team
right.
as guys were leaving the bench, mm-hmm. and there are going to be more fines like that for
no doubt about
situations
it.
Like you I, know yeah. all too well of.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
There's so many opportunities where you can be taken advantage of in this game, but like Arian Foster said last night, the outrage is dumb. Baseball and hockey fight all the time. Every time football and basketball players get into it, it's some ethical issues. I don't know if it's as much of a ethical issue of the fact of we just have never seen it in the sport before.
What's the question here, Bill?
How much different is the fight last night that we saw from other sports that mm-hmm. we see?
Well, the difference is that, and I think you're right, in Major League Baseball and NHL, it's accepted. In the NFL, it isn't. I what I don't understand is why is that? I mean, I think we glorify it. I think in hockey, yeah, they throw the gloves down, they go.
But the boom, league boom. Has taken a lot of the fighting out of hockey.
They still do it, but it's glorified. We stay and watch it. It's not with this whole thing. Oh my God! It's just oh my God! Oh. But with hockey, it's not oh my God. In Major League, and you just showed me the clip of the Harper thing. That's straight crazy. I do remember that. And that was no, oh, my God, look at these guys. There was none of that.
They suspended for 10 games, and we kept it moving. But, like, in baseball, you are suspended. And like
no, what I'm saying, there was no outcry from the public. There was
because
no
they've
real.
Seen it before. They've
so
never
it's
seen
okay.
No, it's just that we've never seen somebody get hit in
gotcha.
The head with their own helmet.
Gotcha.
Right?
Like, that's true. No.
Is that part
and
of it?
And that's no. what makes it different.
Yes.
If they would have fought each other and there was no helmet being swung on each other, we're not even talking about this.
So that's today. The outcries, the helmet.
That's yes. where it seems like for me. It's the part of it where you add the helmet
but
into
then
it.
You just I just saw this clip of these jokers throwing helmets.
Right, because
baseball players.
Because they've done it before. It's happened for years. That's also way de-escalated from where these fights used to be in baseball.
Okay.
Dude used to come in with steel cleats in baseball.
All righty.
No, you're something. Not you're not buying it?
Well, I am. And I get the minimization of, is that a word? I get the minimization of, well, we dialed it back. It used to be, right? Right is right and wrong is wrong. I mean, I get you try to curtail it back. I get what it used to be. Yeah. I mean, I think hockey, they maybe used to hit jokers with sticks like 30 years ago. I don't know. And now they don't. But what they do to me is almost, it's not frowned upon. It's almost like that's why I go to see hockey is to watch these jokers fight. Like you just already said, but Gary, they got guys. That's their job. That's what they do. Like goons. They bring them in. That's this guy just go out and lay out another guy. That's what he does.
Well, and that's not his only job. You're taking that out of context.
No, but I understand. But that's why that's part of the reason why we got not
100%. One of his talents.
Not
100%, right?
Yes.
I mean, like, that's why Marquise Pouncey's on a team, because he's a little bit of an
nutcase,
right?
Yeah, but we don't condone it. I mean, we didn't bring him in to fight. I mean, he's a little different.
But we brought him in to scrap and set a precedent of what we want on the team.
He's a little different 414-799-1250. I don't know if we got time to take a phone call, but I'd like to hear some folks get in on
it. I'd like to hear you talk about J&J Contractors.
J&J Contractors. Go talk to my good friends right now. Ask for Jason at J&J Contractors. Guys, you're looking to renovate your home. They can do that too. So what I mean by renovating your home, kitchen cabinets, countertops, maybe add on a new bedroom, maybe a, let's say, bathroom. Maybe you want to be livable space. Yes, so maybe redo your basement. They can do that too. So if you want to do, say, like a playroom for your children, or say if you want like a man cave, guys, they can do that and much, much more. Call my good friends up today at J&J Contractors.
Is it different what we saw last night than in other sports? The only difference could be a weapon involved, or is it a different precedent? Wendy's Big Show on the Fan.
It's been called embarrassing by your coach, and I think player. I mean, you think that's a fair description of?
Absolutely. You know, that is embarrassing. Now, what I did was foolish, and I shouldn't allow myself to slip like that. That's out of character, but situation like that where it's an emotional game, like Larry said, and allow myself to fall into those emotions. You know, with that last play and what happened.
It's an emotional game. That's Myles Garrett after the game last night. It is. It's an emotional game. It's a physical game, and it changes the thought process when you've been getting your head rammed back and forth for the last 3.5 hours repeatedly, and Myles Garrett loses his cool and breaks the internet last night with what happened in the game. We'll talk to Jerry DiNardo coming up here in about 15 minutes from right now. Wendy's Big Show on the Fan. How much different is the Myles Garrett fight from a fight you see in baseball or the NHL? Let's go to Jameson in River Hills. Jameson, you're on the Fan.
What's up, fellas?
What's up, man? How you doing?
You know, I've always been a don't start no stuff, won't be no stuff. And there's no way, shape, or form that you can justify swinging a helmet, on a guy who's not wearing a helmet and using the helmet as a weapon. But Rudolph seems to be just getting away scot-free with this.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
If this was Cam Newton, that a late hit, purely a late hit, clearly a late hit, and Cam Newton started trying to take the helmet off of, some lineman or some middle linebacker or whatever, and they got into a scruffle, and Cam Newton tried to kick him in the nuts, tried to grab him by the nuts, all kinds of stuff, and then in turn got his helmet ripped off, and he kept squawking behind an offensive lineman, got around him, and the guy swung on him.
Right.
I mean, this reminds me of the guy at a bar. I used to be a bouncer. The guy at a bar who's squawking behind the bouncer or squawking behind his big friend.
Yep, his big buddies.
And then when they're gone,
mm-hmm.
they get their butt kicked. And then they want the cops call. You don't justify using a weapon, but still, once that helmet is ripped off your head, that is game over. You are done.
Yeah, you lost. You're done.
If you're going to be equal in treatment as everybody, if you are going to announce punishments, you announce everybody's punishment at the same time. You don't come back 3 days later and say, we looked at the pictures. We looked at the tape. Because it's all over the internet. Everybody can see him kicking Garrett in the balls. You can see him going, trying to rip his helmet mm-hmm. off.
He's twisting his head, twisting his neck. Appreciate it, Jameson.
Everybody can see that. So why are you waiting to make a decision on the quarterback getting a punishment? Probably because he is a quarterback.
Well, and probably because... Sorry, thanks, Jameson. Probably because he's not going to get suspended.
Yeah. He's only going to get fined, apparently, is the report out, that he'll be one of the players that gets fined, but he's not going to get suspended. But he
Which
will get fined. Because all of these guys are going to get fined, too. So not only are they going to get suspended, I can't see what the fine's going to be for Garrett as well.
Well, and each team has been fined $250,000, as the organizations have been fined for what happened last night. And then the individuals, like you said, are going to get fined. And then the dudes that left the bench are going to get fined all over the place as well.
So why are the teams being fined?
Email from the NFL says the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns organizations have been each fined $250,000. And three players, Myles Garrett, Larry Ogunjobi, and Pittsburgh's Marquise Pouncey, have been suspended without pay for their actions.
So not having control of the teams?
Maybe, I'm guessing that's what it would be. And allowing guys to run off the field, run onto the field. Have you ever seen that part of it?
No, and see, I think, to me, the refs let this get out of control, and they get off scot-free.
Always.
Just me.
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard anybody blame the refs until you came on.
Yeah. They got off scot-free. This game was out of hand way before this.
And it was strange after the game listening to all the players, because with Deontay Thompson, I think is his name, when he was bleeding out of his ear, like you said earlier, Gary, like there are hits to the head. There are hits that are crazy.
There's
the
one
that we saw from Demaryius Randle.
Yeah,
each team is saying, well, those are things that happen in the game. Those are things that happen in the game. This was clearly a game that got out of hand quickly. Jeff Sentosa is up on the fan. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. So, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. I know that Jameson, he tried to compare it to a bar fight, but, you know, that's like going to a bar, getting into a bar fight, and the guy pulls out a knife. Well, I started the bar fight, so it's okay for him to pull out a knife. I know that's a crazy analogy, but he pulled a weapon and smashed him in the head with it. I mean, that's completely unacceptable, and I think that's where the line gets drawn. I don't condone fighting in sports in general. I know sometimes I would get kind of excited when a brawl breaks out between a pitcher and a batter and the bench is clear and stuff. And I can't really attest to why it's different in football other than the fact that he ripped his helmet off and smacked him in the head with it.
Well, how about this, Billy? How about this? Thanks for the phone call. How about this, Billy? If this dude pull a knife out, I ain't walking up on him. I'm walking away.
I'm walking away. I'm getting away. This guy's got a gun. This guy's got a weapon in his hand. I'm leaving.
Yeah, I can't, could be a I gun, can't be could here. Be a whatever it is.
I'm sitting here. I'm done. Nice. I lost. I'm done.
Right?
Walk away. And there's part of it that there was just no judgment off of Mason Rudolph to say, I'm done.
Walking away.
I'm going to lose.
Mason Rudolph thought, there's no way he's swinging that helmet at me. That doesn't happen in football. There's no way. So he's got one hand taken up by the offensive lineman that was DeCastro that was trying to get in the middle of him.
Right.
And then he's got the other hand. This is a free shot. I'm going to get a free shot at him because he's got no hand to hit me with. And then all of a sudden, here comes the hand with the helmet.
One of my buddies, Josh, he's the guy that Jameson always talks about. That Jameson was talking about, the one dude that's always talking.
Yes.
And then stands behind you and your three buddies while he's talking.
Got one of those.
And then as we diffuse the situation, you know, everybody's saying goodbye. He goes, man, you don't want any of this. No, you don't want any of this.
And that's what Mason Rudolph
looked
like.
You don't want any of this.
That's what he looked like.
Go to your bench.
Yeah.
So what do you do to said Josh?
We push him back.
Yeah, we push him back. And once we get back, he falls asleep. You bury him with a couple of couches. Justin's on the south side of Milwaukee. He's up on the fan. Hey, Justin.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So I got a couple of points on it. One, everybody wants to talk about how Rudolph tried pulling his helmet off. Rudolph pulled his helmet off because they're losing by 14, and should have gotten a roughing the passer. He threw the ball over Garrett. Garrett then proceeded to try to take him down to the ground anyways, right?
Yes.
So that's one point.
Yes.
That, the root cause of that, right?
Yes.
Then you've got the entire aspect of like somebody just said, you know, why is he going after him still? Yeah, I don't think he had any thought. If somebody pulls a knife out, I think you plan to stab me with a knife. You whip my helmet off, I don't expect you to hit me with that helmet. And then my third point, you guys are asking about what other sports are bad. See, I think, to be honest, as bad as this was, I think it was in this heat, it's the adrenaline, it's all these other things, right? When you go to a baseball fight, what happens, why is there a baseball fight? Because a pitcher premeditated a throw at a batter. So you're actually trying to cause or inflict pain, right? There's you thought about that before you even stepped on that mound, or you watched that ball sail. So you're actually planning this. You know this is an end result. And in football, while it looked much more horrific, than the baseball thing. I think the baseball thing's worse because you're either somebody told you to do it, you decided to do it, you told your boys, you know, everybody in the clubhouse, you're going to do it. Get ready, this is going to be a thing. So it's kind of a premeditated thing in some of those.
No, you're right.
Appreciate the call. He's exactly right. I mean, there's not many times like the Chris Archer fight that happened earlier this year between the Pirates and Reds was different than the fight that happened between the Reds and Pirates later in the year, right? Where the chirping happens and then dude went and charged the entire dugout.
Yep.
Earlier in the year, Chris Archer got a home run hit off of him. He got mad, saw the dude celebrate, and then two innings later, he's like, oh, I'm going to teach him. I'm going to throw this one at
and
him.
That's what happened.
And then he got his ass kicked. So, I mean, like, that's somewhat what happens when you start something like this. You're going to pay the consequence.
But you don't expect one guy to charge a dugout by himself.
No. I will say,
but
I did not see that happening.
Didn't the coach do that, though?
Well, no. The coach walked over, took the ball from him, And then I'm losing the guy's name. He played basketball at St. John's, too. And he's looking over, and he's like, all right, well, here we go. He throws the glove down, and he runs right over at the dugout. Then David Bell, who had been ejected earlier in the game,
came back out.
Then came out of the clubhouse to then go fight the other manager. And didn't get fired.
Yes.
Don's on the north side before we get to Jerry DiNardo on the fan. Hey, Don. Dion, sorry.
Yo, what's up, guys?
What's going on, Dion?
Listen, man, we all saw Rudolph try to snatch the man's helmet off. Now, mind you, Garrett was kind of standing over him, and as they're on the ground and Garrett's trying to get up, Rudolph's still reaching at his helmet, twisting his head.
Mm-hmm.
No one's talking about the potential damage that could have been done to Garrett by someone snatching you up by the neck and putting you in a compromising position. So he reacted in any way that any man would and wanted to show him, okay, you want to go there? Let's play that game. At the end of the day, Rudolph is getting away scot-free. Where I'm from, if you run up on a man, regardless of whether or not your helmet is off, regardless of whether or not we in the game, you run up on another grown man, you better be prepared to throw hands or get your head whooped, period, point blank. It don't matter if we in a football field or in the street. You run up, prepare to get done up, period.
Run up, prepare to get done up. That's the quote of the day right there. That's the quote of the day. That's the perfect quote of the day. That's the best way to put it. Run up, prepare to get done up. And he did. He got done up. Mason Rudolph did. He got done up by...
that's pretty good.
That's a good one. 414-799-1250. Jerry DiNardo comes up next from the Big Ten Network. Former All-American offensive lineman for Notre Dame. Coached at Vanderbilt, LSU, Indiana. He works for Big Ten Network. He talks football with us next here on the Wendy's Big Show.
Young Express, can we talk about so much continuing to grow? Are you looking for a new career? Would you like to be a part of a Christian-based family-run company? Company that's been in business for over 27 years. Well, you're in luck. Young Express, company we talk about so much, is growing. Currently looking to add straight truck drivers and positions in their sales departments. You've heard me talk about what a great company this is to work for. Now go and apply online at youngexpress.com. JUNGExpress.com. The different positions open. There's one perfect for you. All right, so let's talk about the straight truck driver thing, shall we? You always hear us talking about driving a van for them, but right now they could really use straight trucks. Usually straight truck owner-operators have to lease their truck on with a company, but at Young Express, you don't have to do that. They are looking for those people that want to maintain their independent status and run under their own authority. You need, or you must have, your own straight truck. It must have a DOT-approved sleeper. It must be dock high, and it must have your own authority. You can drive as a solo or a team. You can run the Midwest region or the 48 states. That's up to you. The loads are 99% no-touch freight, which means no breaking your back. All dock-to-dock, no home deliveries. Young Express has 24/7 dispatch, and now the most important details, over 900 direct customers, over 1,000 partner carriers. That is a big deal, because if you are sitting for days on end without anywhere to go to pick up your next load of freight, you are not making money. Check it out today at youngexpress.com, JUNGExpress.com, Young Express. Success drives them.
Jerry DiNardo from the Big Ten Network's here talking college football with us next on the Wendy's Big Show. AM 105.7 FM, The Fan. You can tweet your questions for the Godfather of Fantasy Football at 105.7 FM, The Fan. On Twitter, use the hashtag BigFantasy. Get your question heard and answered after the top of the hour with Tom Kesnick joining us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. The Big Ten Network, the All-American, Jerry DiNardo joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline talking some college football. Jerry, appreciate the time today.
Good to be with the group back again.
So now, Jerry, there's been a lot of changes that we have now seen across the Big Ten, but one constant in Ohio State at the top. Can we talk about the Big Ten West and what's going on in Minnesota?
Well, they're hitting on all cylinders for sure. Exceeding expectations the second year for sure. You know, one of the things that we came out of camp thinking is, you know, the offensive line was probably a little bit behind maybe the rest of the team and some of the offensive lines in the conference, but, you know, they're running so many RPOs and they're doing so many different things with formations. I think they bought that offensive line some time, and now, you know, they're They're playing pretty good. Joe Rossi continues to do good work on defense, and you know, they won some close games early in the year. They got a lot of confidence, and now they're a pretty good team. And it's far better, not far better, but certainly better than most of us, including myself, expected going into the year.
Do you feel like at Minnesota this is sustainable? I mean, like, are they here to stay? Because the West has really kind of been about Wisconsin, then maybe Iowa. But now you're looking at Minnesota. Are they a new player now in the West?
Not yet. If you look at the recruiting rankings right now, they're actually sixth in the West. The only team they're ahead of right now is Illinois. And they've got a decent-sized class already. So it's not like a case of a recruiting class being ranked low because they haven't signed a bunch of kids. You could say that about Nebraska. I think they only have 13 commitments. But I think sustainability is about recruiting, okay? Because, you know, you look at the people that have sustained their program. They may not all be great recruiters like Urban Meyer. That's certainly one of the reasons he sustained at a high level. You look at a team like Iowa. You look at a team like Wisconsin. They were sustainable because they knew their recruiting niche. And it might be different than the Penn States and the Michigans and the Ohio States. So I don't think PJ's been there long enough to say that he's sustaining a recruiting niche. He's certainly a good coach. He's certainly a different kind of guy. And I think he's got much more of a future than, say, Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill, because he is different, he is unique, and he is young. So there's definitely a step forward. Sustainability is about recruiting, not really about the other stuff.
I saw a piece the other day, and you probably saw it too, on ESPN about Scott Frost in Nebraska. And in there are former players talking about the fact that they're getting a little bit concerned here that Nebraska could go the way of Army, who Army, you know, years and years and years ago were, you know, one of those top football programs or whatever, and eventually it got away from them, and they'd never been able to get that success back. And Scott Frost, in that article, Tom Osborne talks about the fact that he's kind of viewed as the Messiah in Lincoln, Nebraska, that he was going to come back and resurrect this program and put them back on top. And obviously this year has not gone the way that Nebraska has wanted. Do you think they're in such peril, like some of their former players are saying, that if they don't get this thing fixed quickly, they're not going to have that history to fall back onto when it comes to recruiting?
No, I think it's a different day. You know, those ex-players, I'm guessing, were maybe part of it when it was the Big Two and the Little Six, when it was Oklahoma and Nebraska in the Big Eight until Colorado came on. And so it's much different. What Jim Harbaugh and what Scott Frost are doing with the programs that they both quarterback is a lot harder to do than when they played. When Jim played at Michigan, it was Michigan and it was Ohio State. It was Bo Schembechler, it was Woody Hayes. It was two teams. Nebraska was Barry Switzer, Tom Osborne. I mean, those days are so far gone. Here's the problem with ex-players. And the only reason I know this is I'm an ex-player, but I'm an ex-coach probably more than an ex-player. Here's the problem with ex-players. They only see college football through their eyes at the time that they were at their
program. It was Jason Peter who said it.
Okay, so what year did Jason play? I mean, I remember the name, but you have to refresh my memory.
Mid-90s, I think, somewhere in that area.
So in the mid-90s, college football, it was a flat world. Now it's a round world. I mean, it's not even close to what it was like in the mid-90s. I mean, I was at LSU in the mid-90s. Football has changed so much since then. And so you can't an ex-player, their only perspective is 4 years of Tom Osborne. Would they lose three games? That's a pretty good perspective.
Yeah, right.
Pretty easy. There was Title IX. There was 120 guys, 150 guys on the team, on and on and on. So I know I'm rambling. All I'm saying is, let's go to year three with Scott Frost. The other thing is, and this is a universal problem, year two presents a morale problem that year one doesn't. Everybody buys into year one, the year one coach's message, right? Even the guys that didn't play for the other coach, because the guys that didn't play for the other coach, they know it was the other coach's fault. They didn't recognize talent. In year two, the same guys that didn't play under Mike Riley are now not playing under Scott Frost. So all of a sudden, there's not 100% buy-in. There's 10% of guys that say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about either. So there's some morale issues in year two you don't have in year one. So I think the Nebraska people have to be a little patient, a little more patient. If they thought Scott Frost was going to come in 2 years make it look like Tom Osborne's program,
That was a mistake.
I know we're talking about the Big Ten, but it just feels like, too, you look at these signature programs, though, it seems like, you know, teams like USC, Michigan, Florida State. I mean, those were, yeah, I guess, back in the day were signature programs, and they've just kind of fallen on hard times. And I guess it will be tough to think that there's no players in California, and all of a sudden they've dried up in Florida, and Florida State can't get them. You can even look at Notre Dame. I know their game plan is a little different than most, but you look at a lot of these signature programs, they're just not as dominant as they once used to be.
Yeah, it's true. But I also believe this. If you have greatness in your past, you can have greatness in your future, because the reason that you had greatness in your past is probably still there. Of course there's players in California. That's one of the reasons they were so good. It's a private school. It's a private education. It's glamorous. It's sexy. The Coliseum. Those things haven't changed. It's the right coach at those players. If you take Urban Meyer and say you put him at Michigan 5 years ago, this is Jim Harbaugh's fifth year at Michigan.
Right.
Do we think it would look different right now if Urban Meyer went to Michigan instead of Ohio State?
Yes, I think it would. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And yet yeah. The tradition wouldn't have changed, and so on and so forth. So, in recent college football here, recent college football history, there's not a program that without the right coach can't come back, in my opinion.
Talking with the legend Jerry DiNardo here on the Wendy's Big Show, Big Ten Network, where you can find the Wisconsin Badgers and Nebraska Cornhuskers coming up at 11 tomorrow. Jerry, as you look across the Big Ten and also, too, you try to see where these college football playoff teams are going to end up coming out of, with Minnesota being the team right now that could end up being the undefeated Big Ten champion, we answer a lot of questions here about if Wisconsin was that. Would they get in, or would they get, downgraded because of the history of the program, that they haven't been to that level yet? If Minnesota is clearly in there, undefeated, beating Ohio State, beating Penn State, they're going to the college football playoff, correct?
Correct. Any undefeated Big Ten team is going to the college football playoff, without a doubt, especially after being left out the last 2 years. The whole playoff system would just fall apart. There would be expansion within a year or two. It's just not good for football. I'm going to tell you guys, you look at that committee. I have lost all confidence in that committee. I mean, I look at the makeup of it. Since Barry and since Tom Osborne left, there is not a coach that has been appointed that has ever had any exposure coaching-wise north of the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, you just look at the committee when we're off the air. You put it up there. You look at the history of the committee. The first three coaches were Tom Osborne, Barry Alvarez, and Tyrone Willingham. And I'm guessing that Barry and Tom leaned to the Big Ten. I think probably Tyrone was probably impartial. And I'm not saying that the Southern coaches are doing this maliciously. They just think that they're better, just like we probably think we're better. There's bias, and who is allowed? If you look at the makeup of that committee, some of those people have no football background whatsoever. And you guys know coaching personalities. Some of them can't shut up, like me. So the strongest voices in that room are the three coaches. Coached at Arkansas, Clemson, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, on and on and on. Just look at their background. And so, this is part of the problem.
Well, let me ask you this. So do you think they should expand this kind of playoff format or no?
I do, and here's why. And I was a BCS guy. I didn't want to go from 2 to 4. But here's what I've convinced myself of. It's easier to pick 2, and I know we're not going back to the BCS, because I think 2 is pretty easy to pick. I think 4 is the most difficult number to pick. I think 6 helps you, 8 helps you even more. And I got to tell you guys, when I look at that committee, we're asking them to do too much.
Right.
They're not that good. You know how good you have to be to pick 14?
Hey, coach.
How much video you have to watch,
coach.
How knowledgeable you have to know about the game. They can't do it. We've given them an impossible task.
Coach, listen, I got an idea, right? So this is what we do. And I'll try and organize
Steve
it for
you. Steve is full of ideas.
I am full of ideas, but I got a way to do this, and I think you'll be on board with it. So I'll be the one in charge of organizing it. But we'll get all of these people on this board together, right? And we'll have them fill their face with some great food at your restaurant, and then you can kind of oversee everything and help them along their way.
You know, I thought you were going to go with the way of the beer, and I was all in. you had me until my restaurant, because I'm kind of out of the restaurant business now. Ever since October, I've kind of retired from the restaurant business. But so the brat and the beer might sound good.
That works. But either way, you want to be involved in all of this. So if I nominate you to get in, are you going to go do it for me?
You know, I'm going to have my biases like everybody else has. I'm just saying, this thing has just gotten so crazy. It's just...
So you're saying eight teams then be the perfect number for you?
Okay, now either six or eight. Now, here's my research, okay? If we just take what the last 5 years, if we take the committee's last rating, right, the one that announced the top four, and you went to six, every major conference would have been represented at least three times, as many as five. If you go one through eight the last 5 years on their last poll, the numbers obviously go up for the Power Five, and you also get a group of five in there. My point is, if you didn't change anything but made the damn thing easier for a bunch of people that don't really know, they know a lot of football, but it's an impossible job. If you go six, every major conference is going to be represented yearly, most likely. If you go eight, definitely every major conference is going to be represented. There's one year that if you went eight, there would have been three Big Ten schools.
Wow.
in the tournament. And this is if you do nothing different than just use their last poll and go as deep as six, go as deep as eight. We have to make it easier for the committee. We've made it impossible for the committee.
Do you like that idea better than just one representative from each of the top Power Five conferences, what you just laid out where it is, just take their still rankings and go one through eight?
Yeah, I do like it better than that, because I think that's a little bit of a cop-out that I don't want to use, because there may come a year when a conference doesn't have a good team.
Right.
You know, there may come a year when the SEC or the Big Ten have four good teams, you know. So I don't want to make it that cut and dry. I'm telling you, if we just expand it, unless we get a better committee, we have two choices, get a better committee or expand it. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
You know, when you look at this Big Ten versus, say, the SEC, which obviously is the number one conference in college football, and you go through and you look at the coaches in this division, when Urban Meyer was at Ohio State, he kind of called out everybody in the division or in the conference, saying that we all have to recruit at a higher level. It just can't be Ohio State competing against all these top schools. And we had Darrell Thompson on the other day, and Darrell Thompson was saying that since Fleck has got into Minnesota, he goes after some of the same guys at Alabama and Auburn and everybody else's. Meanwhile, if you talk to Barry Alvarez, who we've had on this station a number of years ago, he says, well, there's not exactly players raising their hands to come to Wisconsin. And the overall general philosophy of recruiting when you're at a Big Ten school, do they just have to shoot for bigger fish in general from team to team across this conference in order to try and catch up, kind of like Fleck is trying to do at Minnesota?
Okay, first of all, Fleck is not signing the same people that Alabama and Ohio.
No. Darrell Thompson didn't say he was signing them, but he said he's trying to get into the same living rooms as the same guys at Alabama and those are. Not that they're getting them, but he's at least trying to get themselves involved in the conversation.
Okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to get in the conversation. I would say that's a good strategy. But the number one strategy is, what is your niche in recruiting? I mean, Wisconsin's had a niche in recruiting, and it has served them well. And what's the end goal? I mean, I think you can win the West 3 out of 4 years and continue to coach at Wisconsin for the rest of your life. I think you could win the West 2 out of 4 years in Minnesota and coach the rest of your life. You could lose 2 games in 2 years at Ohio State and get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what's my niche and what's my administrative expectations, okay? And, like, if you look at Wisconsin's niche, it certainly has worked. They have been to Indianapolis more than anybody else in the conference. Yeah. And their niche in recruiting, whatever it is, I think we all have opinions what it is, that works. This is what I'm saying. We don't really know PJ's niche yet. He hasn't really been there long enough. I do know this. The faster you sign that, the faster you figure out your niche, the longer you'll wind up
okay.
coaching at that point.
Well, then let me ask you this. I'll throw out coaches. You tell me if you know their niches. Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern.
Do I know his niche?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, correct. Well, and what is it?
Well, first of all, it's not initial eligibility, right?
Nope.
Right.
you know, you have to, it's somewhere between normal admissions, because they're not playing with kids that are normally admissible to their school, just like none of us do. And so it's somewhere between normal admissions and I don't know how the line is. I don't think Fitz is a recruiter that's going to play all the games. So I don't think he's going to be the social media guy. He's not going to be, you know, the crazy friendly recruiter. You know, he's going to be pretty businesslike. And, you know, it's worked okay. It's worked okay.
When you talk about Harbaugh at Michigan, he was the crazy social media guy going and sleeping at people's houses and climbing trees and doing all that crap when he first got to Michigan. Seemingly that has toned down. Do you think he's rethought and changed his recruiting style?
No, I just think it's probably less public. I don't think that served him well. And to me, the scheme niche has overridden his recruiting niche. I think his recruiting niche is okay. But think about it, until this year, he had a high-risk defense with a conservative West Coast offense. So Don Brown's blitzing, right, giving up a couple big plays, giving up two or three touchdowns, and they have this plodding offense that there's no way, with the time remaining in the game, that slow West Coast methodical offense could ever catch up. Look at the South Carolina bowl game 3 years ago. They had like a 12-point lead with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Don keeps blitzing. Jim can't score another point, mm-hmm. and a terrible South Carolina team. Yep. And so now, finally, although I don't know that this is purely a spread team, it looks like a spread team mixed in. I'm calling it a West Coast spread. It's got a lot of West Coast principles into it, because I think Jim wants to be able to still call a play that he knows. But at least they're a little bit more explosive, plus Don's now playing more zone coverage. So I think his biggest problem was scheme niche more than recruiting niche.
Jerry, appreciate it, man. We can't wait to keep watching Big Ten Network tomorrow as the Badgers take on Nebraska there. And we always appreciate you, and you have a couple of minutes for us here on the Wendy's Big Show. Really appreciate it, Jerry.
Thanks, guys.
That's Jerry DiNardo from the Big Ten Network joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
One of my favorite guys.
We're going to get Tom Kesnick in here in
another
a couple of seconds from right now. Christian Yelich is having some fun on Twitter as the scheme or the conversation about pitch or detection and stealing signs. Christian Yelich going out of Chicago Cub. We'll bring that to you a little bit later on from right now. But Tom Kesnick answers your fantasy football questions next here on the Wendy's Big Show. First, Gary Ellerson with Pella Windows and Doors.
Guys, I want to talk about a good friend at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, and specifically Gina Della and the Experience Center on Blue Mound Road in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Steve found something funny.
I just saw what he was talking about.
Yeah, it's going to be funny. No, it's good. Good. Well, you know what? I tell you, you have fun, though, at the Experience Center.
No doubt. I did last time I was there.
Yeah, you have fun. There. I mean, if you can go out, you can touch, see, and feel the windows and doors that you like to buy. A lot of people can't say that. I mean, these guys come on a little booklet, a little swatch, and you should open it up and show it to you. Of course, we have those too, but we also have the Experience Center as well that you can come out and touch, see, and feel. And if you walk in the door, you might hear Gina Della from Pella. Guys, when you go out there, tell her I said hello. And they have great financing options for every single budget. They have the best limited lifetime warranty on wood windows. They have great innovations, guys. You don't use window screens in the winter. Enjoy the view year-round and get the award-winning roll screen that practically disappears out of view, guys. Go check my good friends out today. Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin and the new Experience Center on Blue Mile Road in Brookfield.
At 105.7 FM, The Fan, use the hashtag BigFantasy. Tom Kesnick answers your fantasy football questions next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.